Smoke! Smoke!
Billy, what's going on?
I just come back from the stable. Tilden and Franklin and them gun hands of his done dropped their gun belts, and they're all heading this way. I don't know what they're about, but I bet you it's bad trouble.
Smoke set his tumbler on the bar.
I know what it is. Thanks, Billy.
Son, you go over there and stay put. Andre, get this young man a lemonade, s'il vous plaît.
Billy slipped from the table to the eggs and cheese and beef end of the bar and filled the napkin with goodies, then sat back to watch the show. The big bouncer, Mike, stood close by Billy, his massive arms folded across his barrel chest. They both saw the tent flap fly back.
Gambler!
Yes, rancher?
I thought I'd take you up on that offer, gambler.
Certainly. Be my guest.
Tilden and his posse walked to the bar.
I would like to propose a toast to the day when we rid the country of all two-bit nesters.
All right.
Tilden and his men drank. None of the others in the bar acknowledged the toast.
What's the matter, boys? None of you like my toast?
Smoke lifted his glass.
To the day when farmers and ranchers all get along.
That's fine.
Smoke's friends toasted that one.
What's the matter, Tilden? You don't like my toast?
You know, I've always had this theory, Jensen. Or whatever your name is. My theory is that most gun slicks live on their reputations. And without a gun in their hand, they are mighty thin in the guts department. Now, what do you think about that?
I think you're mighty thin between the ears, Tilden. That's what I think. Now, what do you think about that?
I'm not armed, Jensen.
Neither am I.
Clear space for us, boys.
Gambling tables and chairs were pushed back, stacked against one wall. Soon, the barroom floor was empty.
I'm gonna break you in half, Jensen. And then your wife can see for herself what a real man can do when she comes to my bed.
You're a bigger fool than I first thought. Now make your move or shut your goddamn flapping mouth.
All 240-odd pounds of Tilden rushed towards Smoke like an enraged bull. Smoke just stuck out a boot. Smoke planted a boot in Tilden's ribs.
Now, Smoke. There's no kicking a man when he's down. At least not till it gets interesting.
Tilden rose to his feet.
You are a dead man, Jensen.
You've been trying all this time, Franklin. What makes this time any different?
Taking bets right here. Any takers?
Haywood, Colton, Hunt, Ralph, and Ed had quietly slipped into the gaming room and were standing close to the front. Big Mama O'Neill bullied her way past them.
100 on Tilden!
100 on Tilden from Big Mama O'Neill!
Why, this is barbaric!
This is an old-fashioned bare-knuckle fight, Hunt. They had them back east, too.
All bets are in, gentlemen. Proceed.
Smoke, weighing some 50-odd pounds less than Tilden, faced the bigger man. Both men lifted their hands and balled their fists. Tilden flicked a few quick jabs, feeling out punches. Tilden's head snapped back, his eyes showing surprise. Tilden's roundhouse caught Smoke on the shoulder. It was a powerfully thrown punch. Smoke countered with a right to his belly. It was like hitting a piece of hardwood. Tilden grinned at Smoke, and the two men went after each other toe to toe. Smoke soon realized that if he was going to win this fight, that was something he had to do for morale's sake, if nothing else. There was no way he could stand up and match Tilden punch for punch. The man was bigger and stronger, and in excellent physical condition. Smoke's features turned to a cold mask of rage. This was the man who dare imposed his will on all others. This was the man who had sworn to run Smoke and the others out of this part of Colorado. This was the man who had boasted he would take Smoke's wife. Smoke lashed out with a boot to the knee. Tilden dropped his guard. A second was all that Smoke needed. Blood flew from one side of Tilden's mouth. He staggered under the combination, just for a second, his legs buckling. Smoke saw a tooth fly from Tilden's mouth. The big man rushed forward and grabbed Smoke in a bear hug.
Son of a bitch! Nobody does that to Tilden Franklin and lives!
The air was crushed out of Smoke. He tucked his head under Tilden's jaw.
Yeah? What do you do to people who do this?
Smoke savagely head-butted Tilden in the chin. Tilden's mouth snapped shut and his teeth caught his tongue. The man's chin and shirt grew slick with blood as his grip eased and Smoke slipped from the bear hug. Smoke didn't give him time to recover. With a shot to the face and a fist to his solar plexus, Tilden buckled over. Smoke stepped in close and grabbed Tilden's head and hair with both hands and brought the head down at the same time he was bringing a knee up. Tilden staggered back to the bar. Smoke charged in. Clint rushed forward.
All right, goddammit, this fight's gone on long enough.
The Apache Kid's gun butt connected with the hand's head.
Your man started the fight, now Smoke's gonna finish it.
It was a savage, brutal attack on Smoke's part. But Smoke knew from having the old mountain man preacher as his teacher, there was no such thing as a fair fight anyway. There was only a winner and a loser. Twice, Tilden nearly slumped to the floor. Twice, Smoke propped him back up and went to work on him again. He shifted his attention to Tilden's face, his punches ruining the man's once handsome features. Smoke's flat-knuckled fist knocked out teeth and loosened others. His fist completely flattened Tilden's nose. One punch to the side of Tilden's head ripped loose an ear, almost tearing it off the man's head. Still, Smoke didn't let up. His fist smashed into Tilden's sides and kidneys and belly and face. Tilden Franklin, the bully of the valley, the man who would be king, the man who would control the destiny of all those around him, lay among the cigarettes and cigar butts. His blood stained the trash on the floor. He was so deep in his unconsciousness he didn't even twitch.
I never believed it, but I seen it. Lord have mercy, did I see it!
Let's see, now that's $100 you owe me, Big Mama. You can give it to Billy over there. Oh, and all UTF riders can pay Big Mike.
I have some medication at the office that will ease those swelling hands, Smoke. I'll be waiting for you.
Smoke leaned against the bar and nodded his head. Clint pushed himself up from the floor, a nasty welt already showing on his head.
Hey, Doc, ain't you gonna see to Mr. Franklin?
At the office. I'll prepare a bed for him.
Smoke belted his guns around him and began working his fingers to prevent him from stiffening any worse than he knew they would.
Someone drag that cretin from my premises.
Big Mama O'Neill laid five $20 gold pieces on the table in front of Billy.
Here you go, Billy. $100 just for you.
Billy looked up at her with a bit of egg sticking to his upper lip.
Man, I sure like gambling.
I done told you, Haskins. I didn't want no trouble. Luke Nations, fastest gunslinger in the West, turned right around and started heading west. He had a lady to save, and no two-bit crooked sheriff was about to keep him from doing his duty. Luke looked to the horizon. Somewhere out there, the Indian tribe had his Mary, and he wasn't going to wait around to see... Velvet? Velvet?
Only the silence greeted Adam Colby's call, and then it came to him, the silence. The birds and small animals around the place were used to the kids walking through the woods. They seldom stopped there singing and chattering and calling simply because they made some noise. The boy picked up his single-shot .22 caliber rifle and put his dime novel in the hip pocket of his patched and faded work pants.
Velvet!
Looking for something, kid?
When Adam Colby came to, the first thing he noticed was that the sunlight through the limbs had changed somewhat, shifting positions. Adam figured he'd been out a good 30 to 45 minutes. Painfully, he got to a sitting-up position. His head was hurting something fierce, and things were moving around like they shouldn't oughta. He found his .22 and checked the load. Slowly, cautiously, the boy made his way through the timber toward the rustling sound. He came to a little clearing and paused, peering through the branches. It was Velvet. She was lying under a bush, and she didn't have any clothes on. Her dress was torn off and tossed to one side. A bunch of TF riders were standing around, some of them bare-ass naked, some in their long handles. And there was money all over the ground. Adam couldn't figure that part out, but he knew what the men were doing. He'd never done it with a girl himself, but he wasn't a fool. Velvet appeared to be unconscious. He could see bruises on her face and on her chest, and there were dark marks on her legs where the riders had gripped at her with hard hands, like one was doing right now, poking at her from behind, like an animal. Adam lifted his rifle and sighted in. It was not going to be a hard shot, but he had the rifle loaded with little shorts for squirrels. It was a good shot, the little chunk of lead striking the rapist in his right eye. The rapist just fell over backwards, off Velvet, and he lay on his back, his privates exposed.
Shit, where'd that shot come from?
Over there, behind them bushes.
Adam felt something hard strike his chest. He lost his grip on his rifle. Adam knew he was bad hit, maybe gonna die, but he lay still as the men ran up to him.
God damn it, a kid!
We're getting out of here.
Yeah, but Donnie, what about Steve?
Take him with us, Singer. We'll bury him proper.
Oh, shit. Look at that rifle. Little son of a bitch killed him with a lousy .22.
Come on, damn it.
When they were gone, Adam tried to reach his sister. He couldn't do it. The pain in his chest was getting worse, and he was having a hard time seeing. He pulled his dime novel out of his pocket and took his worn stub of a pencil. Slowly, with bloody fingers, he printed out a message. Then, the boy lay his head down on the cool earth and closed his eyes. Smoke and the others arrived back at the Colby place a few hours before dark. They had pushed their horses hard. Bell Colby met the men in the front yard.
Smoke, I can't find Velvet or Adam.
Bob met us, Bell. Charlie stayed with Colby just in case. They're probably a couple of hours behind us. Any idea where they might have gone?
No. Velvet has her, what she calls her secret places in the timber where she goes to be alone.
Apache. Preacher once told me you could track a snake over a flat rock.
I'll find her trail. Everybody just stay back till I locate some sign. And don't come up to me when I do find it. I don't want none of it all mucked up.
The Apache kid began walking in a crisscross manner, looking to anyone who didn't understand tracking like a man who had lost his mind. In less than 5 minutes, he stopped.
I got it! Stay behind me!
Apache was following the girl sign, not Adam's. They found the girl first.
Good Jesus Christ.
Luke Nations dismounted, peeled off his duster, and wrapped it around the girl.
How is she?
She's been roughed up bad. Bruises on her face and her chest. She's conscious, but not all here.
Looks like there's about $20 here. This isn't making any sense to me.
Smoke! I found Adam, too. I think you better come on over here.
Smoke and Luke joined the kid.
Oh, Lord.
The Apache kid was holding a dime novel.
These words written on this page here, my reading ain't too good enough to make them out. Smoke?
Smoke took the book and looked at the bloody printed words.
It was TF Riders who done it to Sis. TF Riders who shot me. Get them for me, Luke. Get. That's it.
Luke Nation stood stony-faced, but there were tears running down his tanned, lined, leathery face.
We play it legal-like, Luke. When that fails, then we go in shooting.
You play it legal like, Jensen. Me, I'll play my way.
Luke turned to go.
Luke, Charlie told me when you signed on, you rode for the brand.
I do.
It's my brand.
Luke stood for a moment, then slowly nodded his head.
Right, boss. We play it legal-like, but you know damn well how it's gonna come out in the long haul.
Yeah, I do. Or at least suspect. But when all the shooting is over and the dust settled, we're gonna have United States Marshals in here. Plus all sorts of lawyers and other big-worded people. I don't want anyone to point the finger at us and be able to prove that we started a damn thing. That makes sense to you?
Put that way, I reckon it do.
Smoke, Luke, and the Apache Kid rejoined the others. They broke the news.
We need the sheriff out here first thing in the morning. I'll go. I'll take the book and give it to Lawyer Brooke and tell him the story in the presence of Sheriff Carson. The girl also has to be seen by Doc Spaulding. She's in bad shape. Wilbur, you go hitch up a wagon and fill the back with hay for her comfort. I'll borrow a horse from Colby's stable and pick up mine on the way back. You boys tell Sally I'll be back when she sees me.
You take her easy, Smoke. Them hands of yours won't be fit for no quick draw for several days yet.
Smoke nodded, his eyes cold. Tilden Franklin had tried to sit a saddle, and he had fallen off twice before he would allow himself to be taken back to his ranch in the back of a buckboard. If he was not blind crazy before, he was now. He knew it would be a week, maybe longer, before he was fit to do anything. He was hurt bad, and he had enough sense to know it. He also had enough sense to know, through waves of humiliation, that since he had started the fight in front of witnesses, there was not a damn thing legally he could do about it, except lay in the back of the buckboard.
Oh, shit!
Oh, God damn you, Smoke Jensen. No, I'm gonna pay.
Smoke had met Colby and Charlie on the trail and broken the news to the father. Colby and Wilbur had exchanged wagons and rolled on. Charlie had insisted on returning with Smoke. He didn't say it, but Smoke was glad the gunfighter was with him, for his own hands were in no shape for any stand-up gunfight. It was long after dark when they rolled into Fontana and up to the doctor's office. Velvet still had not spoken a word, nor uttered any sound at all.
Huh! Doc! Doc Spaulding! Get out here now!
Smoke? What the hell
is... It's Colby's girl, Doc. She's hurt something bad. She's in the wagon.
What? Let me see.
Smoke opened the back of the wagon to show Colton the girl. She didn't react in any way. She just stared off into space.
My God. Bring her inside to my examining room. Mona!
The doc's wife came rushing out of their house. Her face drained to color when she saw Velvet.
Oh, dear God in heaven! Who did this?
We'll find out in due time. Go get Hunt Brooke and his wife. Am I correct in assuming, Smoke, that you're going to want to tell the story to a lawyer?
Yeah. I had Billy send for the sheriff on our way into town, too. He should be here soon. This is a matter that concerns the whole town, I think.
You don't mean...
We're all going to find out what I mean together.
Right. Well, first we need to bring Velvet inside. Give me a hand.
Okay.
On three. One, two, three!
As gently as they could, they brought the child into Colton's exam room. Lawyer Hunt soon made his appearance with his wife, Willow. Colton did a quick checkup in the other room, with his wife Mona assisting him. Soon, Sheriff Carson appeared.
So, Smoke, where's the fire? Billy pulled me out of a plenty fine poker game.
Velvet Colby was raped.
What? Do you know who did it?
Yeah, Sheriff. Her brother saw it happen.
Where is he? I'd like to speak with him.
He's dead. Killed by the rapist. But he wrote it down in this book.
Smoke handed the damning dime novel, autographed by Luke Nations, to Lawyer Hunt. Nobody had noticed when Lewis Longmont entered the office. He stood off to one side now, listening. Lawyer Hunt read the message and looked at Monty.
Can you read, Sheriff?
Hell yes.
Then read it and pick a side.
Hey, I don't pick sides. I'm the law around here.
That remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Monty flushed and read the bloody words.
Doc, how is she?
Now, the girl's visible wounds will be easily treated. They're mostly superficial. But her mental state is quite another matter. She's catatonic.
Smoke was tired, sore, hungry, disgusted, and couldn't remember when he wanted to kill anybody more than at this moment.
Now, what in the goddamn hell does all that jibber-jabber mean?
Settle down, Smoke. She'll be fine physically, but mentally she's not there. Just staring in space. It's how people deal sometimes. Their whole mind just shuts down.
Smoke looked to Sheriff Carson.
You want a war on your hands, Monty?
Hell no.
Then somebody better hang for this, or that's exactly what you're going to have on your hands. A war!
Smoke stepped out into the night and walked toward the best of the hotels.
You ever heard the expression, caught between a rock and a hard place, Sheriff?
Sure.
Why?
Because that's where you are. Time to show your cards.
The news swept through the town of Fontana fast. Sheriff Monty Carson found Judge Proctor in a local bar.
Let's go, Judge.
Whoa! Hey, what the hell, Monty? Can a man finish his drink in peace?
Don't give me that bull, Proctor. Man like you's never finished drinking. Now move it. Now listen up good. A little girl out in the country's been raped. The witness was shot and killed, but not before he wrote down what happened. It was T.F. Riders, Judge. They did this.
Son of a bitch.
So, not another drink until this is over. If you don't think you can handle that, I can damn well put you in a cell and be sure of it.
You wouldn't dare.
Try me.
Goddamn Tilden Franklin. What was he thinking about authorizing something of this odious nature?
Don't know. But be ready to go at first light, Judge. No matter how the chips fall, we got to play this legal act all the way.
Judge Proctor watched the sheriff walk away into the night.
Well, this should be interesting. A fair hearing.
The night wore on. At first, the news of the money near where the girl was found puzzled Louis Longmont. Then his mind began working, studying all angles. And soon Louis felt he knew the reason for the money. It was a thin rope Tilden had managed to grab onto. Louis figured the man really must be quite insane to authorize such a plan. Colby and Bell and their kids were all deeply religious folks. Most farmers were. And the sheriff and judge were going to be forced to handle this right by the law books. But there was always the jury to consider. And money, in this case, not only talked, but cursed. Big Mama sat at the back of her bar and pondered the situation herself. Even though she was as cold-hearted and ruthless as a warlord, something like this brought out the maternal instinct within her. She looked around her. She guessed it wouldn't take near as long to tear all this down and get gone as it had been to put it all up. Damned if she wanted to get caught up in an all-out shooting war. But sure as hell, that was what was going to happen. And that Smoke Jensen, well, she was revising her original opinion of that feller. He was pure straight out of hell, that one. No punk like she first thought. 110% man. And even though Big Mama didn't like men, she could respect the all-man types, like Smoke Jensen. Meanwhile, Ralph Mara lay beside his wife, unable to sleep.
What is it, Ralph?
I'm thinking of that poor child. And I'm thinking that I just may have been a fool where Tilden Franklin is concerned. After witnessing that fight in the gaming room this very day and seeing the brutal, calculating madness in Tilden's eyes, I know now that Tilden will stop at nothing to attain his goals, even the rape of a child.
As Ralph Mara lay staring at his bedroom ceiling, Hunt Brooks sat in his office looking at the bloody dime novel. Like the gambler, Hunt felt he knew why the money had been left beside the raped child. And if his hunch was correct, it was a horrible, barbaric thing for the men to do. But did Tilden Franklin have anything to do with it?
Of course he did.
Colton Spaulding dozed on his office couch. Even in his sleep, he was keeping one ear out for any noise Velvet might make. He didn't expect to hear her make it. He felt the child's mind was destroyed. He suddenly came wide awake, his mind busy.
Dear, supplies. I have to order many more supplies. I'll post the letter tomorrow, today, and get it out on the morning stage.
Colton knew there was going to be a war in this area of the state, a bad war. And as the only doctor within 75 miles, he figured he was going to be very busy. Sleep was elusive for Smoke Jensen, too. And not just for Smoke. In the room next to his, he could hear Charlie Starr's restless pacing. The legendary gunfighter was having a hard time of it. Mistreatment of a grown woman was bad enough, but to do what had been done to a child, that was hard to take.
War.
The word kept bouncing around in Smoke's head. Dirty, ugly range war. Smoke finally drifted off to sleep, but his dreams were bloody and savage. Not one miner worked the next day, or so it seemed at least. The bars and cafes and hotels and streets and boardwalks of Fontana were filled to overflowing with men and women, all awaiting the return of Judge Proctor and Sheriff Monty Carson from the sprawling TF spread. Luke Nations had stayed at the Sugarloaf with Sally and most of the other gun slicks. Early that morning, however, Pistol LaRue, Dan Greentree, Bull Flagler, Hard Rock, Red Shingletown, and Leo Wood had ridden in, and the town had taken notice of them very quickly. The aging gun hawks made Monty's deputies very nervous, and to the deputies' way of thinking, what made it all even worse was that Louis Longmont was solidly on the side of Smoke Jensen. And now it appeared that Johnny North had thrown in with Smoke, too. Nobody knew how many more the damned old gunfighters Smoke had brought in. And just thinking about those damn old war horses made a fella nervous. Just outside of town, Monty Carson sat his saddle and looked down at Judge Proctor, sitting a buckboard.
I ain't real happy about bringing this news back to Fontana, Judge.
Nor I, Sheriff. But I really, honestly feel we did our best in this matter.
You know what this news is gonna do, don't you, Judge?
Unfortunately. But what would you have done differently, Monty?
Monty couldn't think of a thing that could have been done differently. But for the first time in his life, Monty was beginning to see matters from the other side of the badge. He'd never worn a badge before, never realized the responsibilities that went with it. And while he was a long way from becoming a good lawman, if given a chance, Monty might someday make it.
I said, what would you have done differently?
Nothing, Judge. Not a thing. Let's go.
The judge and the sheriff spotted Smoke and the lawyer waiting for him on the boardwalk in town.
Hello, Mr. Brooke, Mr. Jensen.
Well, what did those TF men tell you?
I'm afraid I should like to wash up first. Since you're handling this case for Miss Colby, Mr. Brooke, I'll see you in your offices in 30 minutes.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Smoke walked with the lawyer down the long, tightly packed street to his law office.
I've got to get the books ready. You can wait out here, Smoke. I have reading materials to pass the time if you want.
Thanks. Hunt, this newspaper's a month old.
It's still news out here.
I suppose that's true.
Smoke looked up as Colby entered.
It ain't good, is it, Smoke?
It doesn't look good from where I sit. You sure you want to be here, listening to all this crap?
Yeah, I sure do want to hear it. I left Belle with Velvet. This is hard on my woman, Smoke. She's talking hard about pulling out.
And you?
I told her if she went, she'd have to go by herself. I was staying.
She won't leave you, Colby.
No, I don't think she will neither. It's just, whatever the outcome today, Smoke, we gotta get back. Get Adam into the ground. You reckon that new minister, that Ralph Morrow, would come up to the high country and say a few words over my boy?
I'm sure he would, Colby. Soon as this is over, I'll go talk to him.
I'd be beholden, Smoke.
Judge Proctor and Sheriff Carson entered the office. The judge extended his hand to Colby.
You have my deepest and most sincere condolences, sir.
Thank you, Judge.
Monty stood with his hat in his hand, looking uncomfortable.
Ah, you're all here. Come in, please.
When they were seated, Judge Proctor looked at them all. Well, this is a bit irregular, and should this case ever come to court, I shall, of course, have to bring in another judge to hear it. But that event appears highly unlikely.
Of course it is.
Now, don't start, Smoke. We've done our best, and I mean that. If you can ever prove we slacked up even a little, you can have my badge, and I'm saying that in front of witnesses.
For some reason, Smoke believed the man.
Here it is. This is highly embarrassing for me, Mr. Colby, and please bear in mind, these are the words of the TF men who were, well, at the scene.
Just say it.
Very well. They say, sir, that your daughter had been, well, shall we say, entertaining the men at that location for quite some time. They say this has been going on since last summer.
What's been going on? I ain't understanding none of this.
Smoke had a sudden headache. He rubbed his temples with his fingertips and wished all this crap would be over. Just get all the goddamn lies over and done with.
Sir, the TF men claim that your daughter, Velvet, has been entertaining them with sexual favors for some time, for money.
That's a damn lie, sir. My Velvet is just a girl. She's nothing but a little girl. And these animals are saying, they're saying that.
We know, Colby. This is all a pack of lies, just like we figured it would be.
My little girl's been, she ain't never going to be right again. And these men are, they're...
Lawyer Brooke handed a cloth to Colby.
Excuse me. Go on, Judge.
Sheriff, would you please take part in these proceedings? You explain. Your damn job, not mine.
Mr. Colby, them Harris brothers ride for the TF brand, Ed and Pete. It was them and Billy and Donnie and Singer and two or three more. I got their names written down. Anyways, they claimed that Miss Velvet was charging the men $3 a turn. There would have been more money on the ground, except that not all the men got their turn.
Dear God in heaven, must you be so graphic, sir?
I don't know no other way to say it, lawyer. I'm doing the best I can.
I know, Sheriff. Sorry. Please continue.
They say Miss Velvet kept her earnings in a secret place back in the timber. They told us where it was. We ain't been there, and y'all know we ain't had the time to go to the ranch into the high country and back here by now. I'll tell y'all where they said it was. Y'all can see for yourselves. Anyways, Miss Velvet's brother come up there and started yelling and hollering and waving that rifle of his around. Then he just up and shot Steve Babbin. That's for a fact. They burying Steve this afternoon. The kid shot him in the eye with a .22. Killed him. Little bitty hole. Had to have been a .22. Well, them old boys just reacted like any other man. They grabbed iron and started shooting. Killed the boy. They kind of got shook about it and took off. That's about it, boys.
Monty looked at the newly carpeted floor.
And you believe their story, Sheriff?
It ain't a question of believing or not believing, lawyer. It's a matter of what can be proved. I don't like it, fellas. I just don't like it. But look at it like this. Even if Miss Velvet could talk, which she can't, it'd still be her word against theirs. And that's the way it is, fellas.
And that's it, huh?
I'm afraid so, Mr. Jensen. Now, I don't like it, but we played this straight by the book. If you could bring me evidence to the contrary, I'd certainly listen to it and act accordingly.
So will I, Smoke. Believe it.
Oddly enough, I do believe you.
Damn it! This is not justice!
The lady is blind, Mr. Brooke. I shouldn't have to remind you of that. Come, Sheriff.
Stepping outside, the judge almost walked right into Pistol LaRue.
Good Lord, it's been years. Pistol, you're looking quite well.
Thank you. How it going yonder, Judge?
Not to anyone's liking, I'm afraid. Are you going to be in town long, Pistol?
It could be. I work for Smoke Jensen.
Oh, my. How many of you men did Mr. Jensen hire, Pistol?
Oh, 20 or so.
Judge Proctor suddenly felt weak-kneed.
I see. Well, it's been nice seeing you, Pistol.
Uh-huh. Same here, Judge.
How come it is you know that old gunslick, Judge?
I was up in the Wyoming country hearing a case of his when he was marshal of a town up there. Four pretty good gun hands braced him one afternoon.
How'd it come out?
pistol killed them all.
And there's 20 of them old gun hawks working for Jensen?
Yes. Rather makes one feel inadequate, doesn't it, Sheriff?
Whatever that means, Judge.
You know, Monty, you could be a good lawman if you just try.
Is that what I've been feeling lately, Judge?
Probably. But since we are in Tilden Franklin's pocket, what are we going to do about it?
We wasn't in his pocket in this one, Judge.
That is correct. And it's a rather nice feeling, isn't it, Sheriff Carson?
You're bittersweet under the circumstances. Would you like to join me in a drink, Judge?
No, Sheriff, I think not. I just decided to quit.
When Smoke and Sally and Pearlie and most of the other aging gun hawks rode up to Colby's place the following morning, they were all amazed to see the hills covered with people.
What the hell?
They're showing Tilden Franklin how they feel and rubbing his nose in it.
Is that... Look at that! That there's Big Mama in a dress!
Must have been a tent maker move into town.
Who is that pretty lady beside the... large lady.
Smoke and Sally were in a buckboard, the others on horseback.
That's Big Mama's wife, ma'am.
I beg your pardon, Pearlie?
Yeah, they married about 3 years ago from what I heard. I was told Big Mama had to slap that minister around a good bit before he'd agree to do it, but he did it.
Sally turned her crimson face forward.
I do not wish to pursue this line of conversation any further, thank you.
The service was a short one, but sincerely given by Ralph Morrow. Adam's body was buried on a hillside overlooking the Colby Ranch. And while most knew the TF riders were watching from the hills, no TF rider showed his face at the funeral. The mood of the crowd was such that if any TF riders had made an appearance, there most likely would have been a hanging. Bill Colby and Velvet sat in the front yard during the service. Velvet had yet to speak a word. Meanwhile, Tilden sat on the front porch of his fine ranch house. He hurt all over. Never in his entire life had he been so badly torn up. His lips were grotesquely swollen, and half a dozen teeth were missing. His nose had yet to be set because it was so badly broken and hideously swollen.
Oh, goddamn two-bit gunslinger.
12 hands pulled out last night, boss.
You pay them off, Clint?
Nope. They just packed it all up and rode off. Told Pete Harris they hired their guns to fight men, not to make war on little kids.
Oh, how noble. To hell with them.
Some of the others say they'll ride for Brand when it comes to punching cows. But they ain't getting involved in no war.
Hell with him, too. Fire them.
What?
God damn it! I said fire them!
Boss... We got a hell of a big herd out yonder, and we need punches to see to that herd. Now, I feel sick in my stomach over what I ordered them men to do to that Colby girl, but it's done, and I can't change it. I reckon I'll answer to the Lord for that. If so, that's between him and me. But for now, I got a herd to look after. Are you so crazy mad you can't understand that?
Tilden took several deep breaths, deeply as he dared, that is, because Smoke had broken several of his ribs to boot.
All right. Clint, you have made your point. I want to tally how many of my men are going to fight for me. Those that want to punch cows do so, but for everyone that won't fight, hire two that will. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
Let's face it. You made a mistake by suggesting what was done to the Colby bitch. I made a mistake by going along with it. All right. Like you say, it's over, it's done. I understand that Colby brat wrote in that stupid book about Luke avenging him, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, I figure by now that old bastard would have come stomping in here, fire in his eyes and his gun smoking. Maybe he's lost his balls.
You never knew Luke Nations, did you, boss?
I can't say that I ever had the pleasure, no.
I do. There ain't a nerve in his body, boss. He'll be coming in smoking, all right. Bet on that. But he'll pick the time and place.
Hire the gunnies, and then tell our gunhawks it's open season on Nestor's.
Yeah. Can I say something, boss?
What is it, Clint?
Why don't we just drop the whole damn thing, boss? Call it off. If word of this war gets to the governor's ears, he's liable to send in the army.
The hell with the governor! We got the sheriff and the judge in our pockets. How's anything gonna get out?
I don't know about Monty and the judge no more, boss. They was both pushing real hard yesterday about that velvet thing.
I got them elected. I can get them unelected.
You're forgetting something, boss.
What?
The people elected them. For 4 years.
Clint turned around and walked off, leaving Tilden alone on the porch with his hurting body and his hate. 2 weeks passed with no trouble, none at all, between Tilden and the smaller spreads, that is. There was still minor trouble in town, but Monty and his men put that down quickly and hard, and the now sober Judge Proctor hit the offenders with such stiff fines and terms in the new jailhouse that it seemed to deter other potential lawbreakers. And Monty stopped collecting graft from the saloons and other businesses. He was being paid a good salary as sheriff. He decided that was enough. Any deputy that didn't like the new rules could leave. A few did, but most stayed. All in all, it was a good job. Monty looked up as the front door to his office opened. Johnny Norris stood there, gazing at him.
You decide to make your move now, Johnny?
I don't know. Mind if I sit down?
Help yourself. Coffee?
Sure. Thanks. What the hell's the matter with you, Monty? You got religion or something?
Well, I ain't got religion, that's for sure. Maybe it's the something. Why you ask?
I've been waiting for you to come brace me for 2 damn weeks. You forget we're supposed to hate each other?
No, I ain't. But I'll tell you this. I can't remember what we're supposed to hate each other for.
Come to think of it, neither can I. Wasn't it something about a gal?
I don't know. Hell, Johnny. Whatever it was, it happened so many years ago. What difference does it make now?
You ain't yet.
Nope. You buying?
Hell, why not? It's getting too damn hot outside for a gunfight anyways.
I hear you.
Meanwhile, the aging gunfighters were having the time of their lives. They were doing what most of them love to do, work cattle. Smoke's bulls had been busy during the winter, and his herd had increased appreciably now that the cabin was over. It was branding time, and the gunfighters were pitching in and working just as hard as Smoke or Pearly. Some had gone to the other small spreads in the area, helping out there. Their appearance a welcome sight to the overworked and understaffed ranchers.
You think all this peacefulness is gonna last, Smoke?
For now, Charlie. Tilden's punchers have been moving the TF herds into the high pastures for a little while now. I'm thinking it's not for the herd. They're clearing out the line of fire.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. And it ain't even got started good yet, Smoke. I got word that Tilden is hiring all the guns he can, and they're beginning to trickle in. It's shaping up to be a bad one.
They any good?
Some of them are bad hombres. Some of them are just starting to build a rep. But they're alive, so they must be fair hands with a gun.
Smoke looked around him at the vast, majestic panorama that nature had bestowed on this part of Colorado.
It's all so foolish. There's more than enough room for all of us.
Luke Nations walked up, a tin cup of coffee in his hand.
Not to a man like Tilden. Tilden, at least for as long as I've known of him, he's always craved to be the bull of the woods. He's crazy.
What'd Colby say or do when you gave him that money we found in that holler tree?
Sent it to Tilden by way of the sheriff. Wrote him a note, too. Told him where to put the money. Told him to put it there sideways.
I sure would have liked to have seen the look on Tilden's face when he got that.
How's his health?
Coming along. Doc Colton goes out there several times a week. About the only thing wrong with Tilden now, other than the fact that he's crazy, is that he don't have any front teeth and his ribs are still sore.
I figure we got 2, maybe 3 more weeks before Tilden pulls all the stops out. He's not gonna do nothing until he's able to sit a saddle and handle a short gun. Then, you look out.
I figure he'll save us for last. I figure he'll hit Peyton first. That's the ranch closest to his range, and the furthest from us. I've warned Peyton to be careful, but that man seems to think it's all over now.
Is he a fool?
No, just a man who tries to see the best in all people. He thinks Tilden has seen the light, to use Peyton's own words.
He's a fool, then. There isn't 1 ounce of good in Tilden Franklin. That little trick with velvet should have convinced Peyton of that.
Speaking of Velvet...
No change. She eats and sits. She hasn't uttered a sound in weeks.
Her pa?
Colby has turned real quiet like himself. Never speaks of her. But I don't like the look in his eyes. Bell told me he takes his pistol out every day and practices drawing and firing.
He any good?
No. He just doesn't have the eye and the hand coordination needed to be any good. He's slow as molasses and can't hit jack crap with a short gun.
Then he's heading for trouble. You want us to go talk to him?
Can if you want, but it won't do any good. I tried talking to him. He just turned his back and walked away.
The fool is digging his own grave, Smoke.
Yeah, I know it. But he's all tore up with grief. I'm thinking he's going to brace the Harris brothers if he ever gets the chance.
Well, they'll kill him. Them boys is real good.
Yep. Think Colby just wants to die.
17 cents is your change. Thank you. Hey, Paul. Nice of you to come in, finally. Where were you yesterday? I had to hold the store the whole day.
I was making my future, Ed. I'm quitting.
You're quitting? Paul, the only reason you got a job here is because I'm your damn full brother. Who's gonna give you a job?
That's just it. I staked me out a claim. Looks promising, too. You're making all the money here and giving me hardly enough to live by. Hell with you!
All right. Fine. But remember this. You'll not get a penny's worth of credit from me.
I got money of my own.
Paul walked on out into the town, feeling as though he had just had a great weight lifted from his shoulders. He was heading straight toward the High Lonesome, where he had staked his claim. Paul was gonna show them all. He'd come back a rich man and take Bountiful from that namby-pamby preacher. And then, just like in one of them dime novels, the both of them would ride off into the sunset to be forever together. Or, something like that. One bright early summer morning, Johnny North and Monty Carson were sharing coffee in Monty's office.
What side of this fracas is Utah Slim on?
I can't figure it myself. He don't appear to be on neither side, and he ain't hurting for money. He's always got a wad of greenbacks.
He gamble?
No, I ain't never seen or heard of him gambling.
He's on somebody's payroll. You can bet on that. Utah don't do nothing for nothing. He's here for a reason.
You find out, you let me know.
Why not? I sure ain't got no axes to grind in this here fight.
Tilden's iron, you know.
Screw Tilden, Franklin. I got me a little claim staked out. Got guys working it for shares. About 5 years back, started putting back a little bit of money every time I had some to spare. Got it in a bank up in Boulder. With the gold I get out of this claim, I aim to start me a little ranch. Maybe do a little farming, too. Hang up my guns and... What are you grinning about, you ape?
Gonna do a little bit of ranching, a little bit of farming, eh?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. Nothing at all. What happens if you run into some big rancher like Tilden when you decide to settle down?
Well... I reckon I'll fight.
Oh, yeah, Johnny. You got an axe to grind in this war. You just ain't realized it yet.
By God, Money. You're right. I think I'll go see if that feller Colby needs a hand. Might do me some good to do some hard work for a change.
He can't pay you nothing.
I ain't asking for nothing.
Sheriff! Sheriff Monty, you gotta come quick!
What in blazes?
That Nestor Colby is about to draw down on a TF gunny named Donnie!
Son of a bitch!
Monty saw a crowd gathered on both sides of a man standing out in the street. He recognized the man as Colby, and with a sick feeling, realized he was not going to be able to stop it. He just knew that Colby had started it, and if that was the case, he couldn't interfere. It was an unwritten rule in the West, and it would be for about a decade to come, that a man broke his own horses and killed his own snakes. If one challenged another to a gunfight, and it was a fair fight, few lawmen would interfere. The gun slick, Donnie, was standing on the boardwalk, grinning.
Who started?
A farmer. He called Donnie out and started cussing him. Are you gonna stop it, Sheriff?
There's nothing I can do, mister. If Colby wants to back off, I'll see that he gets that chance. But I can't stop it. There ain't no city or county law getting a one-on-one fight.
But Colby's gonna get killed.
I reckon.
Hey, what's the matter, pig farmer? You done lost your nerve?
No. Anytime you're ready, draw.
Hell, Nestor. I ain't gonna draw on you. You called me out, remember?
You raped my Velvet and killed my boy!
I didn't rape nobody, Nestor. Your daughter was selling and we was buying. Cash money for merchandise. Your boy busted up in there and started throwing lead around. We fired back. And that's the way it happened.
You're a goddamn liar!
Now that tears it, Nestor. You make your play. Sorry about Velvet, though. Damn shame. Cause she sure liked it. Yeah. The more the merrier.
Colby went for his old Navy Colt 36. Grinning, Donnie let the man fumble.
You ain't dead yet, Farmer. Pick up your gun.
Be a damned man and finish me off, Donnie. You and your kind of get yours in the end. If there's a just Lord, he'll make sure you burn. You son of a...
That's it. Holster your gun and ride out of town, Donnie. Right now. Get gone, boy, or face me. Make your choice.
Hey, I'm leaving, Sheriff. I mean, you saw it. I didn't start it.
Lewis Longmont had watched the whole sickening show from across the street. But like the sheriff, he had made no attempt to stop it. Such was the code demanded of those who braved the frontier. Longmont walked back to his gaming tent. Then a truth made its way into the light of his mind. He was sick of this whole damn mess. Tired of late hours and tired of taking other people's money, even if his games were honest. And tired of sweat-stinking miners and cowboys. Tired of the violence and dust and heat and intense cold. Tired of it all. Just goddamn tired of it. The gambler realized that this was to be his last boomtown. And that thought made him immensely happy. He nodded to his bouncer in front of the gaming tent.
Mike, go tell the Undertaker to prepare Colby's body. And do it up nice. The best he can offer, I'm paying. Also, tell Johnny North to come see me.
A few minutes later, Johnny North stepped into the gaming tent.
You want to see me, Lewis?
The two men were not friends, but then again, neither were they enemies. Just two men who were very, very good with a gun and held a mutual respect for each other.
You know where Colby's spread is located, Johnny?
I can find it.
Someone needs to ride up there and tell his wife that she's a widow.
You telling me to do it, Lewis?
No, but I am asking.
If that's the case, fine, I'll go.
Ask her, no. Ride on to Smoke's place and tell him what happened, if you will, please. Ask him to arrange for a wagon to come for Colby's body.
Yeah, I'll do that too. Lewis?
The gambler looked at the gunfighter.
It wasn't right. That shooting. But we couldn't interfere.
I know. The West is changing. Why, you're gonna ranch and farm a bit with the savings you have up in Boulder. Isn't that right, Johnny?
Lewis, how in the hell did you know that?
I own part of the bank, Johnny.
I think I might just ask the widder Colby if she needs some help up there, Lewis. Oh, not today, no. That wouldn't be fitting. Later on.
That would be a very decent act on your part, Johnny. I think Belle would appreciate that very much.
I'll get going now. See you, Lewis.
See you, Johnny. And thanks.
Johnny North caught up with Donnie about 5 miles out of town. The young gunslick had several of his friends with him. But numbers had never bothered Johnny North before, and they didn't this time neither. Johnny North made all the gunslicks and so-called gunslicks of this group nervous as hell. They all kept their hands in plain sight and as far away from their guns as could be humanly arranged.
I ain't looking for no truck with you, Johnny.
Peel off from your friends, Donnie.
Why?
We're gonna take a ride, just you and me.
Where are we going?
To deliver a death message.
I'll be damned if I'm going.
Do you prefer dead to damned, Johnny?
Huh?
You can either ride to the Colby place with me and tell the widder how you gunned down her man, or you can be taken back to the TF spread, cross your saddle. It's up to you, Donnie.
There's 5 of us, Johnny.
There won't be when the smoke clears, Singer.
I reckon I'll ride with you, Johnny.
Fine. You others hightail it back to the TF. You tell Tilden Franklin that from now on I'll be working out at Colby's place. Tell him to keep his ass and your asses off that range. Y'all got that?
Yeah, Johnny.
Yes, sir, Mr. North.
Yes, sir, Mr. North.
Right.
None of the TF gunnies was looking forward to delivering this news to Tilden Franklin. But none of them wanted to tangle with Johnny North, either. This was the lesser of two evils.
You ride in front of me, Dunny. Move out.
There was five of you! Five of you! I'm paying you men good money, fighting wages. And so far, I've seen goddamn little fighting, but a hell of a lot of running. What does it take to put some backbone in you men?
The gunslick stood and took it in silence. Luis Chamba and his sidekicks, Kane and Sanderson, smiled at the dressing down Tilden was giving his gun hands.
Get out! All of you, get the hell out of here!
Perhaps, senor, it is time for some night riding, see?
Yeah, I'll pass the word, Luis. You're in charge. The others take orders from you. Corriente?
Of course.
Make your plans, Luis.
These games, senor, what are the limits?
No limits, Luis. Let the chips fall.
I like this game, senor.
Yeah, I rather thought you would.
And then I shot him, ma'am.
And you're telling me he started it?
That he did.
Well, then, that's that. I thank you for doing this, Johnny North.
Thought you might have wanted to hear it from me. Have a chance to face your husband's killer.
Absolutely.
Well, then, ride, punk. Don't you never come back here again.
Yes, sir.
Bob Colby stepped forward.
Are you really Johnny North?
Yeah. Ma'am, I'll be riding over to the Sugarloaf. I should be back by sundown. I'll bunk in the barn, if that's all right with you.
That'll be fine, Mr. North.
Well, all right.
You wondering why I'm behaving in such a calm manner, Mr. North?
Well, the thought did pass my mind, ma'am.
My husband told me before dawn this morning, as he was belting on a gun, that he was going into town. I knew then that I would never see him alive again. I did my grieving this morning.
Johnny nodded his head. He sat looking at the woman for a moment longer. Nice-looking woman. Kind of trail-worn, but that was to be expected, for this was a hard life for a woman. Then he thought of all the dance-hall floozies and hurdy-gurdy girls he had known during the long and bloody years. Belle Colby, with her worn gingham dress, sunburned face, and work-hardened hands, seemed beautiful compared to him.
You're gonna need some help around here, ma'am. If and it's all right, I'll stick around and pull my weight, and then some.
That would be nice, Mr. North. Yes, I'd like that.
The crowd was respectable at Colby's burying the following day, but not nearly so many people showed up as had at Adams' planting. Most men, whether they would say it aloud or not, and it was the latter if they were married, felt that Colby had done a damn fool thing. And while most of them didn't condone what Donnie had done, they probably would not have interfered. They might have done something similar had they been in Colby's boots, but it would have been done with a sawed-off express gun in their hands, not with a pistol in a fast-draw type of situation. Out here, a man had damn well best know his limitations and capabilities and behave accordingly. Once again, the Reverend Ralph Morrow conducted the funeral services, and once again, he and Bountiful and lots of others stayed for lunch. That was no problem, for everyone who attended the services had brought some sort of covered dish. Like hangings, funerals also served as quite a social event. Louis Longmont was there, all fancied up in a tailored black suit, carefully tailored to hide the shoulder holster rig he wore under the jacket. The aging gunfighters were all in attendance, too, gussied up in their best. They made no attempts to conceal their Colts, wearing them openly, low and tied down. Pearlie had stayed behind at the Sugarloaf, just in case some TF riders decided to use the occasion to come calling, with a funeral of their own in mind. Monty Carson and Judge Proctor were there, too, and so were Hunt and Willow Brook, Colton and Mona Spaulding, Haywood and Dana Arden. Ed Jackson did not show. He figured he might lose a dollar or so by closing his store.
Besides, Ed felt that Colby had gotten exactly what he had deserved. And the next time he saw that smoke Jensen, Ed Jackson just might give him a good piece of his mind about the totally uncalled-for beating of a fine man like Tilden Franklin. Well, he'd think about doing that anyways. By late afternoon, most of those attending had left for home, since many had traveled miles to get there. About half of the old gun slicks had left, returning to the Sugarloaf to give Pearlie a break. Lewis had left with Monty and Judge Proctor, riding a magnificent black stallion. Smoke approached Reverend Morrow. The man looked a bit older, but also a bit more comfortable in his own boots now.
Hello, preacher.
Mr. Jensen.
Like to ride over and spend the night at our place? It's a lot closer than town, and we have the room. Besides, I'd like for Sally and Bountiful to get to know each other.
I think I'd like that, Mr. Jensen.
Just smoke.
Those returning to the Sugarloaf made their way slowly homeward. Smoke and Sally and Ralph and Bountiful and Buckboards, the rest on horseback.
Oh, look at that big rock right over there, Ralph. Like God himself dropped it right in the middle of the plains.
Oh, that sure is a mighty big one.
Oh, it is all so beautiful up here, Ralph. So peaceful and lovely and quiet. I think I would like to live up here.
Might have a hard time supporting a church up here, Bountiful.
Yes, that's true. But you could do what you always wanted to do, Ralph.
Ralph looked at Bountiful. She was beautiful in the sunlight that filtered through the trees alongside the narrow road.
You'd be content with that, Bountiful? A part-time preacher and a full-time farmer?
Yes.
You're sure?
I'm sure of several things, Ralph. One of them is I am not cut out to be a preacher's wife. I love you, but it isn't enough. Secondly, I'm not so sure you're cut out to be a preacher.
It's that obvious, Bountiful?
Ralph, nothing happened back east. It was a harmless flirtation and nothing more. I think you've always known that, haven't you?
I suspected. I should have whipped that scoundrel's ass while I was feeling like it.
Oh, Ralph, you're a good, decent man. I think you're probably the finest man I have ever known. But you went into the ministry out of guilt, and I think that's the wrong reason for choosing this vocation. Oh, look at us, Ralph. Listen to what we're saying. We have never talked like this before. Isn't it funny? Isn't it odd that we should be doing so now?
Yes. Perhaps it's the surroundings.
After supper, the young couple sat outside the Jensen's cabin, enjoying the cool air and talking.
You know, Smoke, I wasn't always a minister.
I'd gathered.
Was it that obvious?
I've seen your hands. What'd you use to thump before Bibles?
People. I was a boxer, up until about 8 years ago. Went by the name of the Cincinnati Kid. Bare knuckle. My last fight, I was going up against a man about 3 years my younger. He was tough, and a good fighter, but I was driven. Back then, winning was all I had on my mind, that and money. And I was doing well in both. This particular fight had been going more than 30 rounds. It wasn't that big a deal. I'd gone for 90 more than once. But the kid was getting tired, and I saw my opening, and I took it. I threw a left-right combination to his head, and he dropped. Got $100. The kid was dead a few days later. Never stepped into the ring after that. The way I figure it, I've been making up for that ever since. But Bountiful and I've talked about it a lot. Figure it's time I stop dwelling on it and I get on with the matter of living. You know, kind of like how you've been doing.
I think that's a mighty fine plan then, Ralph. So how are you planning on living your life then?
Well, how many acres do you have, Smoke?
I don't really know. That valley yonder is 5 miles long and 5 miles wide. I do know we've filed on and bought another 2,000 acres that we plan to farm. Right now, we're only farming a small portion of it, hay and corn mostly. Right over there is 750 acres of prime farmland just sitting idle. I think we overbought some.
That acreage is just over that little hill?
Sure is. Good, too. We figure you plant something, you'd be hard-pressed to make it not grow.
Yeah, we'll ride over in the morning and take a look at it if you like.
Do you have the proper saddle for Bountiful?
We're about the same size. She can wear some of my jeans and ride astride.
Oh, I have never had on a pair of breeches in my life. But this is the West. Besides, who'll see me?
I don't know whether that would be proper.
Oh, don't be silly. If it's all right for a man, why should it be objectionable for a woman to wear breeches?
Well,
Bountiful? Have you ever read anything by Susan B. Anthony?
Oh, yes. I think she's wonderful, don't you?
Yes, as well as Elizabeth Cady Stanton. You just wait, Bountiful. Someday, women will be on an equal footing with men.
Lord save us all.
Smoke.
Do you think the time will come when women will be elected to Congress?
Ralph sat stunned at the very thought.
Oh, my, yes. But first we will have to work very hard to get the vote. That will come only if women band together and work very hard for it.
Let's do that here.
Fine.
But how?
Well, my mother knows Susan B. very well. They went to school together. I'll post a letter to Mother and she can write Miss Anthony. Then we'll see.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sure Willow and Mona and Dana will be delighted to help us.
Smoke rolled a cigarette and smiled at the expression on Ralph's face. The man looked as though he might faint at any moment. The ladies rose and walked off to the cabin.
So what have you read of hers?
Oh, all that I could find. Wherever I could find a copy of The Revolution, I'd pick it up and read every last word.
Did you hear about her work in Kansas?
With the American Equal Rights Association?
Yes, they did such great work.
My word.
Ralph, I knew that woman was a handful the moment I saw her, but I never... What the hell?
What is it, Smoke?
Look to the west. The glow. Looks like it's about 25 miles away.
What is that? A forest fire?
No. I know where it's coming from. That's Peyton's place. Tilden's hands have fired it.